The Wake County Health Department reported its first case of the Zika virus this week. Doctors say a woman who was traveling abroad started experiencing symptoms of the virus when she returned. It's the fifth confirmed case in North Carolina since the outbreak in Brazil, but scientists here say our climate and lifestyles make it much more difficult for the virus to spread. Joining me now to explain the nature of the Zika virus is Michael Reiskind. He's a professor of entomology at North Carolina State University and joins me now on The State of Things. Hello, Michael Reiskind.
Hi, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Tell us more about what Zika means for us in North Carolina in terms of the likelihood of an outbreak.
I think it's not very likely to have an outbreak. Certainly, you look out your window today, it doesn't seem like mosquito weather, and most of the transmission of Zika is going to be mosquito-borne. And so, you have to hit the timing just right to have a mosquito outbreak of disease in North Carolina. Now, in August, a bit more likely. We're also kind of lucky in a way. We don't spend as much time outdoors and exposed to the mosquitoes that transmit Zika as people do in, say, parts of Latin America or South and Central America. And so both of those factors mean that it's not terribly likely to have a major outbreak of Zika in North Carolina. Now, there is the potential, because Zika can be transmitted sexually, for there to be cases that come up in North Carolina, transmitted in North Carolina, but probably sexually transmitted cases are more likely to come up than mosquito-borne, at least at this point.
Well, tell us about the species of mosquito. Do we have the kind of mosquito in this area that transmits the Zika virus?
Yes and no. It looks like most transmission is from the mosquito called Aedes aegypti. That's the yellow fever mosquito, and it's the mosquito that mostly transmits dengue in the world, another viral illness related to Zika. And it's a mosquito we used to have here historically, but about 30 years ago, a new mosquito came in, the Asian tiger mosquito. And as you can imagine, this was not a native species of mosquito to North Carolina. And that mosquito is very similar to Aedes aegypti. And when that mosquito came into the United States, and particularly a place like North Carolina, it actually outcompeted Aedes aegypti. So now we have this terrible mosquito in our backyard, bites us during the day, the Asian tiger mosquito. Now, that mosquito can transmit Zika. We don't know a lot about how well it transmits Zika or how if it's as good a vector of Zika as Aedes aegypti is. So that remains to be seen a little bit. It's probably usually not as good a vector. It can transmit it, though.
Well, and that points to another important issue in this. It is a vector-borne illness. Tell us what the life cycle is and exactly how it's transmitted and ends up in a human being.
Sure. Somebody who has Zika, of course, that's where we'll start, and the virus is going to reproduce in their body, and it's going to have virions, little viruses, in the blood of somebody who's suffering from Zika. And when a mosquito feeds on that person, they're going to take the virus in with the blood, and they use the blood to make their eggs. That's just what mosquitoes do. Well, that virus that comes in with the blood is going to then actually infect the mosquito, and it's going to have to get out of the gut of the mosquito and eventually travel and reproduce itself in the mosquito until it gets into the salivary gland of the mosquito. And then when that mosquito feeds on another person, it will inject the virus along with saliva as it normally does as it's feeding, and that's how transmission occurs. It's a very delicate thing, and yet, of course, it happens all over the world and can infect, in the case of this Zika outbreak, literally millions of people fairly rapidly.
Now, we know about the symptoms for the Zika virus if you're infected and what the symptoms are to the individual who's infected. But, of course, the big worry in Brazil is a kind of relation or a correlation between the outbreak of the virus and a birth defect. And yet that really has not been linked, although it is correlated at this moment. So tell us about that relationship.
Yeah, I think that right now what we see in the data is a correlation in space and time. And, of course, that is, particularly with human diseases, a lot of what we have to go on. We obviously don't do experiments on people, and so we're a bit limited in these observational studies. But right now, essentially, we have kind of the weakest level of observational study, which is just correlation in space and time between the microcephaly, this birth defect, and infection with Zika. Right now, there's a team from the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, that are doing a more intensive kind of investigation in which they're going to compare cases of microcephaly to controls. And that will give us a bit more data and stronger data to make this connection. But right now, we don't really know how Zika would cause microcephaly. We haven't seen this in other outbreaks of Zika virus. And so there's a lot of questions about that connection. And, you know, it is possible to even have another factor that may actually be causing a birth defect related to Zika. So, for example, there could be an interaction with, say, a pain-relieving drug that people are taking because they're sick with Zika. And so when you look at the population level, it's going to be difficult to tease those things apart.
All right, Michael Reiskin, thank you so much for talking with us.
Okay, thanks.
Michael Reiskin is an entomologist at NC State. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.